Welcome to episode 17 of It's No Secret Podcast Live. We are your hosts, Bianca Rose and Teresa. Say hi, B.
Hi.
We're missing one.
Where's Shari?
I know. Where's Shari? I don't know. No, Shari couldn't be here with us today due to some family events that she is attending. But we do have another guest host in the house, and we are calling her a surprise today for everybody. Here she is.
Hi!
How are you?
Hi, I'm Nikita. You guys may have seen me in the chat all the time because I love the show. So I'm super excited to be the first special guest hanging out on the chat.
Woohoo! Welcome, Nikita, to It's No Secret. Everybody knows you as Jaded Countessa if they've watched our show at all. they know that you are an avid supporter of us, and we love you so much for it.
Absolutely. Is it longtime hater, first time caller?
Slowly hating Kendrick style. When the EP drops, it's over.
We're not hating enough.
You know what I was thinking? I was like, God damn it, we lost a viewer. No, I'm just kidding.
I literally was just thinking that. I was like,
just unsubscribe. We're down one.
God damn it. But yeah, if you guys have ever watched the show before, you guys know we always start off with our highs and lows. Bianca, what is your low of the week?
My low, I actually posted about it earlier because I was feeling a mood. I don't know if you can tell, but I dyed my hair brown.
That should still look ginger to me.
I hate it. I feel like I lost my personality. I feel like a muted person. I feel like I blended in with society and I don't like it. Teresa says that it doesn't look as brown, but to me,
she went like this.
I went,
yeah, basically.
Is it different?
It feels very different. It feels very dark and very.
It is a little darker, but it still looks ginger to me.
Very much.
Can I say that when I did change my hair and it was a fresh color, nobody said anything. And that's how you know it doesn't look right. When someone doesn't compliment on that change.
Who are you with?
She should have gone fully brown instead of this. I'm going to go red brown.
Right. I'm just going to go darker ginger.
But like when people get their hair cut or hair colored, they do something different. If it's good, everyone's complimenting. Like, oh, okay, I see you. I see you. That's everyone pretended to not see me. I didn't get any compliments. I was like, okay, I'll go fuck myself.
I feel like people that tell you stuff like that, though, sometimes lie. Like, they'll be like, oh my God, I look so cute. And then they walk away and they're like, ooh.
That's the ugliest effing skirt I've ever seen.
Yeah, I would never.
Right. And that was my low, was that I just stopped getting attention and I don't feel like myself. So I'll be going back to red soon.
They'll give you attention here. Don't worry. Oh, man. Well, my low for the week is that I'm not rich yet. I still have to go to work.
Oh, God. Same girl, same.
Yeah. I don't know. You know,
that's unfortunate.
I've been praying real hard and, you know, still got to go to work every day.
Yeah. Do you ever play the lottery?
So I've only ever played it one time. So no, I guess. I'm like, apparently you have to play to win.
That's the
apparently that's the rules.
Yeah. I'll play it when they post that it's like record high. It's 8 billion or something. I'm like, I'm going to buy my one little ticket. Come on.
I'm going to buy one ticket. Yeah.
Come on. I need that golden ticket.
But there's like some people like, I know like my dad, he, look at me calling him my dad. Ooh. Instead of my biological dad. Wow. Ooh. Crazy. We'll talk about that Father's Day. But my dad, I know that he buys lottery tickets like every week. And then there are some people like Nikita, me too sometimes, where it's like, oh, where it's climbing up there, where it's like, okay, life changing even after taxes. Mm-hmm. Let me play. And I just need one. Right. You just need one to win. So curious. I'm just offering solutions here.
I heard the only people that win are old people and Puerto Ricans. So...
Oh, that was my other point. A lot of the winners are usually small town people. So, guys, if you're ever buying lottery tickets, a lot of the high dollars are in those small towns.
Yeah,
drive to a small town.
Yeah.
just go to the middle of nowhere, Texas. There's a bunch of those around. Oh, man. Nikita, what was your low for the week?
Oh, my low for the week. So I'm going to reach back into the week is changing from it's no secret to it's no secret instead of the Monday through Friday. Because I waste my time on the
podcast. Yeah. Yep.
So I will say work was working me out. It was working me out. So since we all work at the same place, y'all know that it's upgrade time.
Yeah.
I was like, if I see one more thing, I'm jumping off this building.
Come back to me.
Okay. If someone asks for one more thing.
I literally
had a nurse who just emailed and was like, I'm not doing any of that. And I was like, oh,
okay. Good for you.
Fantastic.
I'm glad you feel empowered like that. One day I will be there.
Controversial.
Brave.
Did I send you both the Living the Dream post?
No.
Yes, you sent me that one.
Okay. I need to send it to you, Nikita. But it's basically like, this is what I mean when I say I'm, or when I'm at work and I say I'm living the dream, and it's a picture of like Freddy Krueger.
Very that. Yeah. Very that.
We're just living the dream.
If I could just get out of the dream one day, so I want to wake up like Neo from the Matrix.
That'd be nice. Yeah. All right, let's move on to a positive note. So, B, what's your high of the week?
My high is that my dog, which you can hear her moaning and groaning here because I'm feeding her treats on the side. She just turned 10 on Monday. So
happy birthday!
My baby knows double digits. She's up there.
She's like her mascot now.
She is. She's honorary. I literally, hold on, because I had to remove her collar so you would not hear her throughout the show. Because she does like to make a subtle entrance and little let be known that she's here, she's around.
She's your baby.
She is. But she did turn 10. Aww, so
happy birthday, Bella.
Lifetime together in our in my 20s. She's seen me through it.
Good.
Terrible emotional support animal, but she's there.
I was just gonna say emotional support animal.
I do have her registered. It's a lot cheaper when if you're renting and stuff, I found. So emotional support animals don't what is it? They get the have to pay it.
Oh,
yeah. So you have to pay like the pet deposits, the pet monthly rents, and all those kind of things.
Oh, nice.
As well as flying. So I wouldn't have to pay for a flight ticket for her. She flies free with me as a registered emotional support animal. So it's cheaper in the long run.
Cheaper to keep her. How do you register a pet for something like that?
There are websites. I came across one on Instagram, I think maybe. But yeah, it kind of you submit her information and then you fill out like a questionnaire of like, oh, what's your daily life? This and that. And then a literal vet reviews that information and then signs off on both housing and traveling letter of notification that she's a ESA.
Nice.
So yeah.
Seems simple.
Life hack.
Where people don't do it.
It used to be more difficult. Like when I had my little boy, you had to get like a doctor to sign off. I don't know. Maybe vets could have done it, but I was getting ready to trick one of our dogs. I was like, I'm just going to slide it in with a prior authorization and see if it's
slide it on in there. They probably would have signed it anyway. They
would have signed my lease. He trusted me. That's why I did it.
They love you, Nikita.
What about you, T? What's your high for the week?
So my high, of course, my mommy moments. Today, Gabby had her little Easter egg hunt at the daycare. Ooh, so she came home and she was like running in with her little Easter basket full of eggs and immediately was just like, open, because they're not allowed to open them at school.
Oh.
Yeah. So just watching her. Because a lot of them have like candies and then toys or things like that. So they don't want them to like make.
I want to rub it in everybody's face that I got all the eggs.
Brought up on sugar in third period.
Exactly. I'm like, they're like, let the parents deal with that. Not smart. Us. So yeah, she just came home. She was so excited. It was just so cute to watch.
Do you do Easter egg hunts with your other kids like at home?
Oh, we usually do it at home. My oldest is about to be 21, so no, not him.
He's got little liquor bottles in his.
Uh-huh. Drink. I mean, he's about to turn 21, and he's going to California to hang with his dad. Shout out to dad. And I'm pretty sure he's going to drink with his dad. So that'll be interesting. I'll be like, send me videos, please.
Can I say I still do Easter egg hunts?
Like, so for your this economy, an actual egg?
An actual egg? From my mom's chicken coops?
Oh, Easter I forget.
That's an expensive ass Easter egg hunt.
Honestly, no, my mom still has, she throws us an Easter egg hunt. Me, it's, aww. So I'm 30. We're 30, 26, 22, and 17, 16.
I like how the fingers came out.
I was like, hold on, there's four of us. And I said, hold up,
five.
There's four of us.
Oh, my Lord.
But yeah, we still do an Easter egg hunt. I was like, mom, I don't care if there's a quarter in that. I'm showing them that I can Easter hunt these eggs. It's a pride thing.
That's
she's funny. Wearing a vest, a hunter vest on. She's like
with the little pockets to hold all the eggs.
She's all full. She wears oversized t-shirts so she can fold it up.
Has a little egg grenade.
My middle child's got a kangaroo onesie. If you want to borrow it.
Ooh, we love a onesie.
We love a team player.
It's got a pouch you can use.
I love it.
The tactical advantage.
I know.
Well, obviously, not being on the treadmill, falling off, laughing, actually being on the other side of the screen is going to be my high for the week. I'm so excited.
You're our first guest, Nikita.
You are.
This is the It's No Secret high.
Yeah, she's been like an honorary commenting guest this entire time. Thank you so much.
I've been the admin of myself in the comments.
The admin.
The moderator.
A moderator for sure.
And I know she tries to multitask sometimes, jumping from like Instagram to YouTube and back and forth.
I'm gonna get those views up.
Honestly, guys, y'all aren't trying. I need y'all to take
you
notes
don't
on
this.
You
have three computers.
Y'all have computers. I had laptops, desktops, phones, Lord. Phones that are off and on, phone that rely on Wi-Fi. Y'all got
if you
resources.
You haven't hacked your neighbor's account to make sure that they're subscribed as a user. Are you even watching the show?
Honestly,
are you even a supporter? How dare honestly. You? All right. Well, it is episode 17 already, which is crazy.
Already? Wow. Our podcast is almost of legal age.
I know. Next episode. That's crazy.
Next episode. Wait.
So our topic for today is going to be hyper independence. So we are going to talk about all things hyper independence. We are going to dive into why. Any of us may be hyper independent and kind of where it all comes from. But I wanted to start with the definition, right? Like, because what is hyper independence? So according to AI, hyper independence, hyper independence, often a trauma response, is an intense self-reliant attitude that goes beyond healthy autonomy, characterized by a reluctance to seek help or support from others and a preference for facing challenges alone, potentially hindering interpersonal relationships and emotional well-being.
This one's gonna hurt.
So can I just say that's probably one of the most negative definitions that I thought were going to come up because I'm like, oh yes, hyper independence. Yes, I'm a boss.
Miss Independent.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Like, start singing it.
The way
it's Miss Independent.
Yeah,
I still messed it up.
She's working. She's learning. She's growing.
You said it on tempo, and I still fucked it up.
Yeah, but apparently it's trauma driven and. It's a lie that we tell ourselves, essentially.
Do you agree with that? That it is trauma driven?
I think so. I honestly, like, as much as I want to be like, no, it's cool to be independent and blah, blah, blah.
It is cool to be independent. But then when you start hyper independent, it's like, oh, okay, now it's a bad thing.
Yeah. I feel like that's the difference between a collector and a hoarder.
Right, exactly. Ooh, yes. That's a good example. That is a great example. I can decide it better myself. But I do kind of agree with it. Do you guys?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do I match the criteria?
Absolutely.
You'll never see my chart.
Oh, man. But yeah, I mean, where do you guys think it comes from for you if it is some kind of trauma response?
Can I say that I think one of the qualities that may fit that is being the eldest child.
Girl, say that.
Because that's what I experienced, is having to take care of everyone and no one to take care of me. If my mom sees this, that's, you know, for legal reasons, it's a joke. But
if my mom sees this, we've already had this conversation.
We've had this conversation. Okay. And you know what you did. But something from being like the oldest child, like you have to, you know, be that role model. You have to take control of those things. You have to have that ability to just do things on your own and set that example, if not do it for others. So just making that habit so early on,
yeah,
really plays a role for me personally.
That's interesting. What about you, Nikita?
Yeah, samesies. Both of my parents are military, and so the armed forces weren't as friendly as they could have been. So there were times where, like, my mom was on a one-year deployment and my dad is a single dad, or the other way around, or even times where one is on a one-year deployment, the other one got a temporary assignment, and so, like, an aunt is watching us. Mm-hmm. And so it was very, like, hey, you have to step up and be part of this household, and we're expecting you to get not just yourself up, but your brother up, and get off to school and be that and fill in the gaps. And I completely understand, like, I would never be someone's parent, but I completely understand now, looking back, to say, hey, I didn't have the luxury of having family around me where your grandmother could have stepped in, or your aunts or uncles are right down the corner. Mm-hmm. So it's you. And people thought my brother was my son when we were out in public, because even though there's only 8 years between us, I'm like, no, you will not be touching that. Come on with me. Let's go here. Mm-hmm. And I'm buying your dinner. No one needs to know this is my mom's card. I'm forging her signature.
Right.
So it was
allegedly. It was very allegedly.
Bad. I think the statute of limitations has passed. It's been like 30 years. So
that's so interesting that both of you guys have being the oldest, because for me, I was the youngest. But there's a big age gap between me and my siblings. So, like, there's a almost 9 year age gap between me and the next one before me. And they're all grouped, like, within like a 6 year window ish from the oldest to the third oldest. So by the time I was barely starting high school, our house was empty and it was just me and my parents. So it was almost like I was like an only child sometimes. And then as soon as I got pregnant, because I got pregnant when I was 19, and I moved out of the house a year after my son was born, my parents retired and moved back to Mexico. So my entire adult life, I had to be independent. I had to take care of things. And then being a single mom for most of my adult life until I met my husband now, but like being a single mom, you have to take care of everything. You have to do that. And that is a very difficult habit to break. So now, like, in all aspects of my life, I feel very like, I got it. Or, oh, they're not going to do it the way I want it done. So let me just take care of it, you know?
Yeah. I think it's interesting that there is that dynamic of you either grow into it or you learn to be it. Mm-hmm. With you learning to be hyper independent in the adult life, where, you know, me and Nikita grew up into thinking that this is the way we live now, that just growing into the adult, and it's set with us. Mm-hmm. But to Traveling John's 66 on Instagram said, boys don't get that pressure as much as girls do.
Agreed.
So
what do y'all think about that?
I agree, but then I think my husband is the reason why I might contradict that, because my husband was like Nikita, where he was the oldest and had to take care of his younger siblings ever since he was a kid. So he didn't really get to experience a normal like childhood, because he had to grow up faster and, you know, take care of the house and feed them and bathe them and, you know, do the things that the parents should be doing. So I think before I met my husband, I would totally be like, oh, yes, you know, boys don't kind of get that pressure. But to your guys' point, sometimes just whoever's the oldest kind of gets right. that pressure.
Yeah.
And it just depends who it is, right?
Now, can you tell the difference between a male being hyper-independent and a female being hyper-independent?
I think they probably show up differently in the home space, probably. Like at work, not so much, but in the home space, I know that there are some guys where it is, oh, I'm showing up and I'm doing this and I have to, but is that toxic masculinity that I'm not allowed to show my feelings, I'm not allowed to ask for help because then I come across as weak? Mm-hmm. Or is that like, I didn't have someone to do it for me, mm-hmm. and I know now if you want something done, you have to do it yourself. So I don't know that I would be able to distinguish the difference out and about in the wild with my binoculars on, scoping things out.
Little Steve Irwin.
I think it's just a different type of pressure for men than it is for women. I think both get pressure applied in these situations, but it's just a different type of pressure. Because with women, we're programmed to think like, you know, oh, like for independent women, right? We're programmed to think, you know, never depend on a man, never depend on somebody else to do things for you, blah, 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 blah. You do everything yourself, right?
Right.
Whereas men, they're pressured to like, you have to provide, you have to be, that's what a man does. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So that toxic masculinity that Nikita was talking about was on point. But it's just a different type of pressure for men than it is.
And so what about y'all's thoughts on a female being hyper-independent because there is no man in her life who takes care of all those roles and responsibilities?
I am a man. It's me.
I am a rich man. What about the women who have no choice but to be?
Well, I mean, when I was a single mom, I didn't have a choice but to be. So, yeah, I get it. I mean, you guys can speak. I've been a single mom my entire adult life. So I don't know what it's like to just be about just me.
Mm.
So maybe you guys can speak to that part.
B, you want to kick
off from the 30s? Passing the baton. That from the
babies. I mean, we can tag team on this one because, again, it is forcing to be hyper-independent. It has its ups and it has its downs because when I – do something, when I'm able to do something on my own, I'm prideful of it. I'll boast about it. Like, wow, I changed the light bulb on my brake light of my car. Can't tell me shit. There are other times where I'm like, I can't lift this. I need someone to hang this TV. Who can I call? And am I willing to call them? And are they willing to also help? There's so many factors that we have to like consider when even asking or considering to reach out for help. So it's like I have to evaluate my capabilities and where that ends to where is that point that I need to start asking for help? Who can help and can they help?
Yeah. Yeah. See, my hyper-independent ass was like, I'll just pay somebody to do it.
Girl, that's another form of hyper-independence. Yes. If you can't do it yourself, pay somebody to do
it. The whole time you were talking about the TV, I was like, girl, if I can't do it, I'm going to pay somebody. I'm not even
going to. I'm all about tricking somebody into showing up. I'm just like, hey, so I'm just trying to make it in this world. I'm so, just come on, please.
She's a dainty female.
I'm just so, oh my God. And then I'm like, and while you're here, can you do this and this and this? I call my dad, my contractor, because he'll come over to do one thing and it'll be like, he's like, oh, well, while I'm here, let me just, and also, and do you know that your toilet's running? And so I'm like, oh, thank God someone knows how to do this stuff.
That's not hyper-independence, girl. That's smart. I'm just kidding.
Hey, use your resources.
Exactly. That's being resourceful for real. That's being self-sufficient in different ways.
Right. I got there at the end.
So is there where's the line between self-sufficient and hyper-independence?
I think when it crosses over to being detrimental to you, where, you know, I've had those moments where I'm like, it is taking those curtains when I was putting my curtains up. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning. These velvet curtains are beautiful. That's all I need to focus on. But I went to put the last one up to adjust it and I ripped the whole thing down. And I was like, you're not better than me.
No.
I don't care that it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm putting these freaking curtains up and I'm taking a picture and I'm sending it to my mom.
Speaking of your mom, Marilyn commented on Instagram. She said hi, Lise.
Oh, man. Is that. I feel like that's just you being stubborn, though, at that point.
Well, because I could have waited and had someone else do it.
This is so true.
To my own detriment, instead of going to bed and being like, fine, you win this round. I was like, no, I'm getting back on this ladder, unsupervised. No one knows. If I fall, my phone is hopefully within my reach and I can dial 911. It's 3 pushes. I can do it.
I can do that. What do you guys think makes it so that you guys don't like asking for help? Why?
I don't want to seem incapable.
So perception.
Very that.
Yeah.
So no one needs to know what I can and can't do except for me. And then maybe I'm working on it and I can watch a YouTube University.
Amen. I've got masters at YouTube.
Yeah, almost to that extent, like the exposing that vulnerability of not being able to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And me, also control.
Oh.
I'm like, what if it's not done right? What if it's not done the way that I wanted it or hoped it would be?
Yeah. Or you ask for help and then you don't want to seem like, okay, I came all the way over here. I'm doing this. And you're telling me it's 3 inches to the left. And I'm right. Like, I hate to break it to you. The laser level's not lying.
For me, it's pride too.
Yeah.
It's a pride thing for me. Like, I don't know. It's hard for me to admit that I need help with something. As I've gotten older, I've gotten a lot better at it. Now I'm like, a bitch is tired. So I'm going to ask for help. But my God. When I was like in my 20s, never would I ask for help. Mm-mm, no.
Do you think that it's because you're now like in a good relationship with?
Maybe. I mean, that might be it. I did tell him the other day. I was like, you know, I've been having to do everything my entire adult life. So I'm fully taking advantage of this time now that you're here to offer and help and stuff. And he was like, oh, I know.
I think also, to your point, it's person of choice. It's who you ask for help, because another reason that stops me from asking for help is that person going to make me feel like I'm indebted to them for helping me out, for reaching out? Mm-hmm. That's a big, big thing for me. Like, I will not ask for help if I know that you are a person who's going to bring it up in conversation, whether it be personal in an argument or to make you seem better in front of our friends and family. Like, mm-hmm. how you want to be perceived afterward for doing that also stops me from asking for help too. Yeah.
But I also, on that point, I feel like, and maybe I take it too far in the other direction too, where I'm like, if you need a gold star for being a good human being, you're not a good human being.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of telling on yourself to be like, I actually handed someone a toilet paper under the stall when they needed it. It's like, great. You're doing the bare minimum.
Thank you so much for that.
Traveling John 66 said the cost, and that's exactly what Bianca was kind of talking about there. Yeah. See, that's another thing, like, especially for me being a single mom, like, I have a really hard time like asking people for help with my children specifically. And I know, like, and trust me, I believe it now more than ever, now that I'm in a different state than most of my support system, that it does fucking take a village. Right. But like, I'm the type, like, it's very hard for me to ask somebody to like watch my kids so that I can go have a good time, because then I feel guilty that I get mom guilt that I'm out and about. And because I've experienced mom guilt pretty much my entire adult life, like, I feel like it just stayed with me. And like with the kids, for example, when my middle child was younger, if I came to the point where I really like needed a break and I asked someone like, hey, do you think, you know, there's a day maybe this weekend or whenever, like, I try to be accommodating, like, where you can just watch her for a couple hours just so I can have some time. Oh, well, as soon as I get those types of responses,
the reliability,
never again will I ask that person ever again. And so, and that's something I feel like I still need to work on, though, because maybe they are just thinking about it because they got a lot of shit going on. You know what I mean? It might not be that they just don't want to, but then again, it might. So I'm like,
I will say to that point that being aware of some of my hyper-independence qualities has caused me to be impatient as well. So even if I do ask for help and you say, I say, hey, can you help me move this couch right now? And they're like, not right now, but I can do it maybe, you know, next Monday. That's too long. I want it done now. No. I'll do it myself. So I think that has also caused me to be impatient too, because when I want something, then I'll try to do it myself because no one else is able to help me do it in that time that I want it done. And I think that also is a big setback for being hyper independent.
Yes, Suchi says it's pronounced Travelin' Jones.
Hi, CG. Now,
going back to what Kita said about perception, I think that's a big one too. Because, like, growing up, even in like my 20s, 30s, I was always that friend that everybody goes to. Like, I need somebody to talk to. I need advice. You know, people joke around and call me Mother Teresa, but there's like a reason for it. You know what I mean? And so I've always been the quote unquote strong friend. And they all come to me, but I don't really go to other people. So that perception of me being the strong friend sometimes backfires, because when you do decide to open up to certain type of people, not everybody, right? But when you do decide to open up, they're kind of like, but girl, you're the strongest.
You got this. Yeah.
Yeah, you're good.
Such a shocker.
Yeah. You know, so it's like, okay, never mind.
And it downplays it too. So it's like, if I'm asking for help, that means I really need the help.
You know that I'm strong.
I don't. Yeah.
You know I don't ask for help. You know I don't come to people for things. So like breaking down that strong friend identity is something that I've struggled with, because I like being that for people. I feel like people need somebody like that.
Right.
But then it's like, it's Beyonce's song, right? Who's there to save the hero, right? Mm-hmm. Like that song to me was like, oh my God, because that's how you feel when you're that friend to people. I will say though, moving to Texas took me away from a lot of that, because I got away from a lot of my friends. And that's when I realized that I was that person for so many people, because I was like, holy shit. It's like a whole weight is lifted off my shoulder. Mm.
It's like pouring from an empty cup, like they say.
Yeah.
Putting your mask on first, yeah.
I'm so busy helping other people deal with their shit that I don't even have time to think about my shit.
Mm. But is that a coping mechanism where it's like, I don't have to worry about what I'm doing because look at me, I'm doing all of this great stuff for other people.
Right. Who knows? No, I have too much fucking pride. And I don't like telling, like, especially when it comes to like relationship issues, I never talk to, like, I'm very particular about who I share those types of issues with, because friends have a tendency to judge based off the one situation. So later on when my dumbass goes back or something else happens, right? Then they're still judging off that one situation. Absolutely. And we're trying to move past it.
That's me. I hate him. I still hate him.
Add it to the things I won't forget.
I won't.
Right.
The Alamo. That other girl.
That other girl.
And that he cheated on you. It's over. You look silly. Don't go back.
That's why I keep stuff like that to myself, though, is because I'm like, judge them based off your experience with them, not mine.
Yeah.
And that's always in the back of my mind. But I see what you're saying, though, Nikita, because as a friend, I'm like, no, bitch.
I'm like,
you're my friend.
Why are you going back?
Yeah.
there's obviously lines, but it's like no one really comes and is sharing like, oh, my gosh, like he really just showed up for me and helped me pick up the groceries and all the day-to-day little things that add up that probably make it worthwhile. But, girl, you told me he cheated on you, he hit you, he this. I'm like, so where are we going?
Right.
Do I need to pull my license plate off? Because I'm ready.
Oh, no. That shit's extreme. Yeah. No, if it was getting that bad, I'd do the shit myself. Yeah.
Not everybody would, knows. They will come to work with a black eye and be like, I just don't understand. I love him.
I wouldn't need to tell anybody because I might be on the news. I might not need to tell anybody.
Well, you do bring up like the relationships and being in a relationship while being hyper independent or being with someone who is hyper independent. So what are y'all thoughts on the dynamic of either one or both of y'all being in those hyper dependent mindsets? How do y'all start a relationship, or how do you make the relationship work? Because there are some good and bad qualities of that in a relationship. Teresa, you're the one who is actually in a relationship, so I want your thoughts on what this is, seeing how you and him both stem from some type of hyper-independence, you being single mom, him being oldest child. Mm-hmm. How did that work out in the beginning, or how does it continue to work now?
I mean, it's difficult because, especially if you're in a situation like me and my husband, we grew up in two very different we had two very different lives. You know, like, I came from a married family, you know, we had a very great family dynamic. You know, he came from a split home, he was raising his siblings, you know what I mean? Like, it was a very different upbringing that both of us had. So we had a lot of factors that kind of played against us. So hyper independence was actually helpful sometimes, because then we can just kind of handle our own shit and still get by. But I can see where sometimes being hyper independent makes you emotionally unavailable to people, because if you don't share or you don't let people in, then how do they really get to know you? But I will say, and not to toot my own damn horn, but toot, I am very hyper independent when it comes to my time on my own. But I have been able to navigate communication in relationships really well. So even though I still have my independence, I can at least communicate like, hey, this is why I do this, or this is why I say that, or this is why I think this way, right? And I think that's important, is the communication aspect of it.
Yeah. And to add to that, I think also self-awareness of when you're being hyper-independent, or when that person is being hyper-independent. Because, I mean, I think I have learned to know when I'm being, you know, hyper-independent, when I'm very stubborn, very prideful of what I'm doing. But recognizing when someone else is trying to be hyper-independent is also really important too, being aware of either yourself or that other person. Because they can communicate, or you can communicate all you want, but if they aren't aware or understanding of it, then you're talking to a brick wall.
Yeah. So. True. Very, very true. I got a comment on our YouTube from George Davis. It's not pride. It's an expected expectation. You do for and expect that in return. Sadly, most people live by a carnal instinct of self-absorption. Oh, my God.
That was deep.
Tell me about it. Tell me about it. George is deep. He's an author. Go check out his books.
Shout out, George.
Yeah, shout out to George. He makes a good point, though, about like the whole self-absorption thing. Do you guys feel like hyper-independence leads to something like that? Or do you think it's the people that aren't hyper-independent that lead to self-absorption?
I think it go either way, because you could have it to where it's like, I don't need anybody, and that I've turned in on myself and I don't trust other people. And so it's like, well, as long as I'm good, I'm good. But then you also have some of those people that it's like, I've always been taken care of. I'm the baby. I'm the pretty little princess over here. And, oh, I'm Little Miss Muffet on my tuppet. And obviously the world revolves around me, because it has been, and it will continue to. So I think it could go either way. It's all in how it manifests for you and what you use it for. Because I do think that sometimes some people, it may not be malicious, but it is malignant. Mm-hmm. And you are using your softness and, you know, being very honest, like, I'm tall for a female. Mm-hmm. I've always been taller. So I've never had that, like, oh, I'm only 4'4". Like, could someone please, like, I'm
just. Not you, Bianca.
I was like, I feel attacked.
You're not 4'4". So, you know, it may not be someone's first instinct, in being very honest. You know, I'm not a white presenting, or, you know, traditionally, like, when you think of damsel in distress, you know, I'm not the person that's going to come to mind and be like, well, let me check in and see, does she need, and can I help? And, you know, when I've been approached for that, it's more like, oh, like, you got this, like, you're a strong, independent Black woman. And I'm like, while that is true, I am not 6'5" and I do not have the carrying capacity or, you know, the ability to do these things. So
yeah,
I think it can go either way.
That's similar to that strong friend identity that we were talking about, but just based on your appearance.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I feel like as far as like friendships and relationships go, I think like hyper-independence recognizes hyper-independence. Talking back to like, you know, the love languages, like you know, what was the theory that like our love languages are what we lacked as a child, or it's a trauma response as to what we're lacking. So for those who are like hyper-independent, we find that most of their love languages are acts of service or, you know, things like that. So when someone, you know, recognizes like, oh, this person lives by themselves, does this by themselves all the time, I know what that feels like, let me help them do this. I feel like friendships, you know, are very strong when they recognize when they have that compatibility. And I think that also kind of circles back to the dating thing too, that if you recognize it, then you know how to help without even asking for it. So it's so hard for hyper-independent people to ask for help or to even recognize that they need help, that if those other people do recognize those qualities, that they know what to do or how to do it.
But also, like, especially when it comes to like relationships and marriages and things of that nature, you learn your partner, right? So you know kind of the things that kind of trigger them. You know what to kind of look for sometimes. So you kind of create a habit yourself as well to know like, okay, when I see them doing this, that's when I need to step in and just help instead of them having to ask me for help. So like it takes time, but I mean, when you love somebody, you love somebody.
But do you find that frustrating? So I know I have where I'm like, I want to help you and I know that I could help you, but if you're not willing to accept it or it's coming in a different way, coming across a different way. And then I'm like, okay, well, obviously you got it. Like I'm trying to help you. I don't want to make it seem like you're feeble or anything like that. But if you want to climb on that shelf and grab it and it's 400 pounds, go for it, girl. Have fun. Yeah.
I think at the beginning, it's more like that where the frustration sets in as you're getting to know each other. I think once you're past that and you actually know each other, then there's kind of like a compromise. There's a middle ground. Like, I don't want to have to ask you for help, but in return, I'll accept when you just go ahead and voluntarily do it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So it's like after time, you kind of just find that middle ground.
Yeah. It's again, back to being acknowledging or being aware and communicating, because you're doing things autonomously. Like you just, it's always been this way. I'm doing it. I know no other way. But whenever you have that help, it's important that one, if you're going to be aware of it, are you okay with it? Or do you want to be helped in some way? Is it going to be relieving? Some people are just fine being hyper-independent by themselves. And that's just their safe space. That's, they like that control. They like that predictability. But there are some people who just don't realize it, and they turn what would be a kind gesture into like, no, never mind, I don't need any help. And they come very defensive over it. So I think recognizing what it is that you want out of, like, are you okay being hyper independent, or are you okay with accepting help? What is that boundary line for those people? Like, I know me being 5 foot, I can't reach the top shelf for something. So I might need to give or take. Either am I willing to climb on the counters to get those top shelf items, or am I going to ask for help? Like, what are your limitations and capabilities? And are you okay with it, or are you willing to ask for help? Because there are some people who actually genuinely fight it. And it can come off as like, no, I'm doing it. I'm telling you no out of habit. Mm-hmm. Or am I telling you no because that's how I want it to be? I think that's very important to like recognize as a person who is hyper-independent, or just people who encounter those hyper-independent people.
And I feel like that though, what everything you just said ties back to what you and Travelin Jones said earlier, which was the cost, right? So when it comes to who's offering the help or who you're asking for help, I think that's what's going to play the biggest role in it all. especially with relationships. Like my sister used to tell me this growing up, my older sister, she used to always say, the person you end up with is not because they're perfect for you. The person you end up with is just the person whose shit you're willing to put up with.
Say that.
Ooh, say that louder.
And so like that always kind of stayed with me. It's like you love somebody and all their crust. And so like if their crust is this hyper independence, then we'll learn to work with it. But if you're somebody that I'm like, no, thanks, then I'm going to be more frustrated. I'm going to be less tolerant. And, you know, the hyper independence of mine will come out more. And it turns into this.
Right.
Oh, I wish we had time to talk about that, how that hyper-independence now becomes like a coping mechanism again, not just out of habit, but it's now something that I'm reverting back to because it's familiar, it's safe. That's like when women, if you're asking like your husband, spouse, roommate, whatever, like, hey, can you do this? And they don't do it. I know I could, but I asked you to, so now I'm just going to do it myself. Now it's not even – it's a coping mechanism. It's a defense mode. It's like – it's supposed to be for good. Now it's for evil.
Mm-hmm. Well, think about like all those reels and TikToks you see where it's like my wife 5 minutes after she asked me to do something and she's like in the background doing it herself.
Doing it.
Right? Yeah. So it's like we also have to give people the opportunity to show us. Okay, so I know B talked about her little like patience, right? You have to show a little bit of patience and a little bit of grace if you're willing to give someone the opportunity to help you. But you have to be willing. You have to be open to that. And a lot of times, like depending on who the person is, I'm not even willing to. So no, fuck it. Yeah, I'm going to go and do it myself. You know, it plays a big part. When do you guys think hyper-independence can be damaging to the point where it turns into self-isolation?
I would say that it's like we talked about before, where it's the difference between a collector and a hoarder. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's always great to be able to do for yourself. And always that rainy day situation where it's like, okay, it may not be the best, but I've jerry-rigged this. And with my mousetrap thing, I'm able to get this bed up 3 flights of stairs. But I also think that at a certain point, if you've been maybe hurt by the response of other people when you've asked for help, I know I've had situations where I was like, hey, you know, I'm showing you my softer side and I need this, or, you know, these things do hurt me. And it's like, oh, I thought you were strong. And so I'm like, you know, you'll never see that again.
Exactly.
You'll never see that again. And no one else will either.
Pride. That is pride.
And vulnerability. Like you took a chance on showing vulnerability that you couldn't do something. And the fact that another person was not able to come through or follow through in some way, that hurts. That's like, if they can't do it, nobody can. Yep. And it's such like
a I took a chance this one time. Fool me once.
Yeah.
Never again.
And also like just real quick before we run out of time, I wanted to call out too. Like there's been times in my life where I had very vulnerable moments where I needed help, like, and everybody knew it. Like I didn't even have to say it. Like, for example, when I got my gallbladder removed, that was an emergency surgery for me. And a couple weeks after my surgery, my husband had a hernia repair as well. And during that time, we had a little baby, like a few months old. So we couldn't carry her. We couldn't pick her up or anything because we were both recovering from surgery. So when you have situations like that presented and no one's offering to help, then you kind of look around and you're like, noted, more hyper-independence. You know what I mean?
I'll figure
like,
it out. Yeah.
Yep. I'm going to figure it out. And that's what we do. I mean, don't get me wrong. We had a couple friends that were absolutely amazing and did come and help us. And then my son stepped up and helped us a lot too. But like those types of situations, when you're extremely vulnerable, to Bianca's point, it shows you who people truly are. And my pride and I guess my hyper-independence don't let me get past some of those situations. And that's something that
I hold on to that shit. Noted.
Yeah.
Hold on to it. Put it in the bank, save it for later. Mm-hmm. I'll remember that.
Do you guys think that you're learning how to ask for help without guilt now? Or is it still a work in progress for you?
It's a work in progress for me because I'm not asking, I'm telling. So y'all don't know, like I'm moving, you know, in, you know, a short amount of time and I don't know how to ask for help, but I did delegate to coworkers to be like, clear your calendar. You're helping me.
Right.
It's not vulnerability.
Well, and you also do it as like a haha joke kind of way, but I'm not joking.
I'm not joking.
Yeah.
Go up with your truck right now.
Yeah. Like it's funny. Ha ha ha. And they're kind of like, is she serious or not? But you are. You know what I mean?
I am very serious.
But it's like you're decreasing the chance of getting a no.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, is that is that a coping mechanism?
I'm not
holding. I don't like being rejected.
I'm allowed to look at it.
She's being confident. No.
I'm going back to therapy.
But I feel the same way. Like I always joke around that like I trick people into coming over to help me do stuff because it's just like, oh my gosh, like maybe I can trick someone and let me borrow a truck or like, you know, different stuff like that. But I think that if I were to say like, oh, I needed the help and I went to a friend or I went to a coworker and was just like, hey, you know, like, would you help me? I would probably shrivel up and die.
That's more vulnerable.
Honestly,
than a joke,
so that's
though.
The thing it too. Yeah. Like
mechanism.
Yeah, like yeah. If I ask for help and they tell me no, I'm gonna cry and I'm gonna remember that to the day I die. If I tell you that you're going to help me, I feel better because the chances are that actually happening is gonna happen.
What if? Or even if they reject me, it's like, oh, it's because I was being mean.
Or
you know, they thought it was a joke. Yeah, you can play it off versus going like, hey, like I really would appreciate, like so earnest, like my hands out, like
please. So what you're saying is you're still a work in progress too, Nikita.
Oh, I'm on hold at this time. Progress has been halted.
We're not progressing because what I'm doing is working. And why would I stop that?
It's working out so far.
Honestly, I'm still a work in progress too. And I'll be frank, I don't know if I'm ever going to get past that. I feel like this is just who I am. I'm 41, you guys. Like, there's not much more that's going to fucking change, okay? Like, you know, I just am who I am and I am kind of prideful and sometimes it bites me in the ass. But hey, you know, I manage. Yeah. I'll figure it out. I'll figure that shit out. Oh, man. This was a great conversation. I like this one.
Yeah. Can we highlight George's new comment?
Oh, yes, of course.
I do like that.
Read it, B. Read it.
Read it.
I can read. No. George Davis says, I love that. Asking for help without guilt. That is such a major step. When you are independent, I put it in the same breath as getting over a fear of heights or bugs. It means you're allowing people into a different level of the trust threshold.
True. Yes, I better get into the circle.
The circle. Yes.
We were coworkers, but now we're friends.
Yes. Here's I've seen your underwear drawer. We're friends now.
Here's the circle. Here's you. No, just kidding.
You can make your way in.
You can make your way in if you help me move this couch.
Yeah. And then maybe go back out. I don't know.
That's it's really hard for me to ask for help without guilt.
And I feel bad because I want to be helpful and I don't want to just appear as helpful, but I want to be helpful. And so I think that like we've touched on in other, the podcast have touched on in other sessions, it has been like you show up for people in the way that you would have liked someone to show up for you. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, it's, you know, it's fine to ask for help. No one knows everything. And then when it comes to me, I'm like, no one can know that I don't know this.
That's so funny. Me and our coworker, Steve, were actually just talking about imposter syndrome the other day and how we just kind of fake it till we make it. I will say, though, too, I think another big reason why it's difficult for me to not be hyper independent is because of the generation that I grew up in. Like we grew up in the straight up like hustle culture.
Yeah.
Like if you weren't hustling, then what were you doing with your life? Whereas the younger generation now, they are growing up in like a, you know, peace, tranquility, mental health is important type of atmosphere that we did not have.
And well, I think too, to your point, you know, think about the major life events that happened when we were coming up. Like we saw
9/11.
A world flipped over. And no one was going to hold your hand. No one was going to tell you, you know, you're going to walk outside and who knows, is there going to be another plane? Is there going to be anthrax? Is there going to be, you know, we saw so many things and it was like, bitch, I got to get to eighth period. I'm sorry.
Everything's on fire behind you, but you're headed to glass.
This is fine.
I mean, I grew up in San Francisco. We had earthquakes all the time.
That was your alarm clock, girl. What are you talking about?
I was in elementary school when the 1989 earthquake hit San Francisco, which is one of the biggest earthquakes that has ever hit. And I was at school the next day, helping the teachers clean up the classrooms.
Yeah.
Because my parents sent me to school.
Yes. Right? My mom always said, if you're not dead, dying, or bleeding profusely from the head, you will be in school.
But that's like the mentality we grew up with in our era. And it's very different now. So I don't know if us, you know, millennials
just the pendulum swung
stuck with us. Yeah. Well, we are at the top of the hour. We want to make sure our Instagram live folks don't get cut off from our viewing pleasures. But first of all, thank you, Nikita. Yeah, like this was awesome. Shout out again to Shari, who couldn't be here today. Just so you guys know, her son is on spring break and she is too. And so they've been doing all kinds of stuff with the kids. She actually went to a baseball game. And then now a basketball game because her younger sister is performing at the Warriors game.
Ooh, so, okay, go girl.
Yeah.
Does Steph still play for them?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Sports. I'm a sportscaster.
She's a sportscaster.
That's it. ESPN, call me. No, just kidding.
Call me. I'm available.
But shout out to Shari, too. We will see her hopefully next week. If not, I guess we'll call Nikita again, you know?
She's going to have so many highs of the week. I can't wait to hear.
She is. If you guys are not following us on all of our platforms, let them know how they can.
Yeah, if you are not already, or if you know a coworker, friend, or family that is not already, then you can like, follow, and subscribe to us on our social media. That's Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at It's No Secret Podcast, and our TikTok account at It's No Secret Podcast Live. And if you are not able to join us on our live stream every Wednesday night, then you can definitely listen to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, which are available every Sunday.
Or you can go rewatch our live videos on YouTube too.
Over and over again. Make up that white noise that you fell asleep to.
You know, grab your friend's phone and subscribe them. No,
anytime you go to the bathroom, just unlock it. It's fine.
Fine. But yes, thank you guys so much for joining us again, Nikita. Thank you. Do you want to see us out, Nikita?
Oh my gosh! Well, you guys know every Wednesday. It's No Secret.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.